ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
This is what the media does. They take anonymous sources from disgruntled former employees, and then they try to slash and burn people and ruin their reputations. Not going to work with me.
And that is our Secretary of Defensiveness trying to blame yet another texting scandal of his own doing on the media. And this is America. I'm Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy. Old Whiskey Pete is trying to point fingers at disgruntled former employees, but the Pentagon does not deny that Secretary Hegseth sent a second group text announcing secret war plans to his wife, his brother, and even his lawyer. Word is the Pentagon, Rachel, is now in full-blown meltdown, kind of like the rest of the news coming out of this administration.
Yeah, if I had to sum up this past week, I'd say the stock market had a mild seizure, flipped a table, screamed, "I'm fine, really," and then collapsed hard into a pile of crypto-themed NFTs. Guys, the Dow is looking like it's having its worst April since 1932, as our so-called pro-business president attacks the Fed chair, Jerome Powell.
Do you believe the president has the power to fire or demote you, and has the Fed determined the legality of a president demoting at will any of the other governors with leadership positions?
Not permitted under the law.
Not what?
Not permitted under the law.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, Interior Secretary Doug Burgum just gave some Doge bro, an oil executive named Tyler Hassan, carte blanche to dismantle the Interior Department and the 500 million acres of public lands it oversees. And the White House issued a new executive order to try and prop up the coal industry, because nothing says the future like coal.
I call it beautiful, clean coal. I tell my people never use the word coal unless you put beautiful, clean before it.
Just ask the free market, dude. Coal is not back. Just like Trump's hair, it's fossilized, flammable. No one asked for it. I mean, when we had coal-burning power plants in this country, guess what else we had, Aaron?
Smog.
Smog. I mean, you look at any photo of an American city from the 50s and you can't see the sky. Did you hear the IRS is now sharing data with Homeland Security? I mean, what could go wrong with that, right? The tax man deports you. Don't worry. If you have nothing to hide, though, you have nothing to fear, Aaron.
Well, as you're quick to remind me, that's what the Gestapo always said right before they carted you off for interrogation.
Yep. Last week, we focused on the imprisonment of Kilmer Abrego Garcia without due process, and we compared it to how the Nazi state suspended due process and used the threat of your neighbors, your friends, your family members, and even your coworkers to do their dirty spying work for them. If you missed that episode, you should go back and give it a listen. It's full of important shit you really need to know.
Yeah, it really was a powerful one. And by the way, Kilmer Abrego Garcia is still in prison in El Salvador. That's despite visits from Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen and several House Democrats this week. And it's also despite an order from the U.S. Supreme Court to facilitate his return home. Remember, Abrego Garcia was arrested and jailed on nothing more than a hunch that he's a terrorist or a gang member. We're not in the business of defending either of those, but that's beside the point because there's no proof, because there was no due process. In other words, if you have nothing to hide, it doesn't fucking matter.
Dude, your girl made a little good trouble over the weekend on Friday night. It was kind of late, and I came across a fresh post from Turning Point USA Nazi Charlie Kirk, who was RTing a White House post that showed Trump holding up what was supposed to be a close-up version of his hand, of Abrego Garcia's hand. And what's interesting is I'm looking at it and immediately I can tell that someone had photoshopped MS-13 above each of the little finger tats that the dude has. So I pulled up an original because I had seen it earlier, obviously we've been tweeting about it quite a bit. And I knew, like I was like, I would notice if it said MS-13 on this dude's hand. So to be clear, I posted up, busted them. And once they got caught, their defense was they were trying to show people how each of the symbols magically stood for MS-13, okay? But they don't, by the way. MS-13 tats are not subtle.
Right.
They literally tattoo MS-13 on their skulls, dude.
Right on their chest.
Right on the chest or on the fucking forehead, dude.
Right.
Okay? You know, I was looking at it and I was like, oh my God, I think they wrote this MS-13 on. And then when you read the copy, There's no mention of that. They don't mention, hey, here we've installed MS-13 so you can decode his special symbols. They tried to pass that shit off like it was his hand, Aaron.
Pays to be paying close attention on a late Friday night. Interesting life we live, huh? By the way, nice work that was picked up by the Daily Beast.
Yeah, it was. And I got to be honest with you, about 20 outlets went quick. And it was good because when I said in the tweet, like, hey, this is just now starting to go viral on the right, right? And we were able to kill that fucker right out of inception. So it was pretty good.
And Rachel, while you were eagle-eyeing the White House Twitter account, the New York Times was eagle-eyeing Pete Hegseth's handling of secret info.
Yeah, turns out, as our Secretary of Defense-iveness was accidentally texting war plans to journalists, he also sent the same info, including details about sources and methods, to his wife, his brother. I mean, did you send it to your mommy too, Pete?
Don't you always share classified war plans with your mom?
I mean, when you're about to launch secret strikes on rebel bases in Yemen, who doesn't loop in their mom? Here, let me set the stage. Here's Petey texting his mom. Mom, can you send me your cheesecake recipe? And by the way, we're going to send some FA-18 Hornets into Yemen. Pete's mom. That's nice, son. I used the recipe on the Philadelphia cream cheese box. By the way, you aren't drinking again, are you?
Don't answer that, Pete. Don't answer that. Yeah, so Pete Hegseth and his defenders say it's fine because no classified info was shared. That's not true. And that the real threat is from employees exposing their crimes. And get this, over the weekend, the former chief spokesman for the Pentagon, who just left his job, he wrote a scathing op-ed in Politico. John Uliott says it's, quote, been a month of total chaos for the most powerful military in the world and a full-blown meltdown at the Pentagon.
Yeah, there's a link to that piece in our show notes, and it's worth a read. Because it's delicious. Look, the entire time Whiskey Pete Hegseth spent in front of the Senate being questioned, by the way, under oath about the Jeffrey Goldberg leak, he knew he had also sent that shit to his own family. It's a developing story that Trump is thinking of replacing him. We've had a couple of Republican members of the House now, and this is, you know, of course, ongoing, so by the time this airs, there may be more, or he may well be gone, but we're starting to see some real momentum to topple Hegseth out of the DOD.
Let's fucking hope so.
Yeah. Do you want to know what I woke up to today?
What, aside from the extra Baileys in your coffee, Rachel?
No, but if I was a drinker, dude, right now I'd be starting every day off with a handle of Canadian whiskey. No, I woke up to see the new War Room account for the Democrats trolling the shit out of Pete Hegseth. And guess what? Hegseth actually responded. So the Democrats hit them back again with a meme of a blurred iPhone screen and a caption that said, Beats POV.
Yeah, they're really learning how to hit them where it hurts.
Which, again, is only possible because the DNC has a new sheriff in town, and that sheriff's name is Ken Martin. You should be following him on all your social channels.
You told us before, but Ken Martin is using hit them where it hurts to revamp DNC strategy.
We're on Ken's recommended reading list for sure. And, you know, Aaron, just as an aside, some of that is about opportunity. And I think I've talked about this once before, but it's always good to reiterate. When a DNC chair is serving under a sitting same party president, they have very little power to innovate. Ken does not have that problem, right? We've been eviscerated electorally. And there's, you know, and that has left us rudderless and leaderless, but it was also an opportunity. And I'm happy to say Ken Martin is carpe dieming the shit out of it. Once upon a time, and some of you may have been with me long enough to actually have lived through this with me, I created so much controversy with negative partisanship theory that the election boys joined together to ban me from their election Twitter clubhouse. My cardinal sin, I pointed out that turnout has just as much influence on election outcomes as does the break of the swing voters, what we would call the persuasion bucket. Fast forward to now, and even the folks at SplitTicket.org are acknowledging it was turnout, not persuasion, that mattered in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race earlier this month. And that, guys, is back to my very beginnings. You know, when you first found out about me in 2018, some of you, what did I say? There's going to be a massive blowback to Trump in this 2018 midterms. Well, we're in the same scenario now. Trump's in power, and it's not just a Republican president. He's blowing up the government and the economy. This is going to be turbocharged negative partisanship going on in every election while Trump is in office.
And a quick recap here, liberal Susan Crawford handily won that linchpin race despite vote buying by Elon Musk. That cemented a victory for the left in that all-important swing state. Now let's read the receipts. Here's a splitticket.org tweet from Monday, and I'm quoting here, "The story of Wisconsin's Supreme Court election was turnout. While the state went from Trump plus one to Crawford plus 10 within 6 months, the large majority of that shift was driven by changes in who was voting rather than voters changing their minds," end quote. Okay, Rachel, take it from here.
I mean, to me, the sexiest words in the English language are, we are going to run negative partisanship strategy. And I'm getting to hear it a lot more, which is good, you know, as we've discussed previously. But it's also what the Crawford campaign did. I'm delighted the Democratic Party is finally getting on board with NPS. I always said with Trump, an ounce of prevention, it will be worth 400 tons of cure. And I think that's coming true. But at least now we're finally getting our shit together to learn how to talk like actual normal humans taking on the GOP.
Better late than never. And folks, if you are sitting there wondering what the hell is negative partisanship strategy, read Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. It is our guidebook to the party's strategic revolution.
So, Aaron, I'm not religious, but I am super bummed that Pope Francis just died.
Yeah, me too.
I fear the Catholic Church is going to swing a lot more conservative at a time when the world badly needs them to stand up to fascism.
Yeah, the Pope met just this weekend with Vice President Vance, and you can imagine what would have happened if Vice President Harris went to meet the Pope and then he died the very next day.
Oh my God, dude, MAGA would be going nuts with that conspiracy. So listen, even though I'm not a practicing Catholic, I am a practicing heathen, though, Aaron. I'm super bummed that we have to lose him just as the world is facing this fascist threat for the second time. He was the first Jesuit pope, and that just means that he was able to focus more, his Catholicism is focused more on social justice. In fact, he pretty much made his world debut washing the feet, I think, of sick poor vigrants, Roman vigrants.
You know, he was a really strong pope and he walked the walk. And that's something all leaders of faith should be doing more of right now, especially.
So aside from the sadness part of it, you know, I do want to say, you know, now we get a poping and a poping, Aaron. It's quite an event. Cable news shows start dragging out Vatican experts. I don't know where they store these people between popings, folks, but there are Vatican experts, okay? And they'll bring them out to opine to which priest will be elevated to the Pope.
Yeah, well, I saw conclave this year. And the best part is when the cable news channels start hosting the live cam for the Pope smoke signal.
The Pope smoke signal, Aaron, I love it.
It's a fascinating centuries-old tradition. And yeah, we'll be having a front row seat here.
I just happened to be watching MSNBC. I don't even know what year it was when Pope Francis was selected as the Pope, but I was there for the moment the smoke appeared, the white smoke. So anyway, part of a new poping, guys, is that there'll be Pope betting markets because, of course, people are going to want to bet on the poping. It reminds me of this old skit. It's one of my favorite fucking skits from George Carlin.
And don't forget, the polls show the American people want capital punishment and they want a balanced budget. And I think even in a fake democracy, people ought to get what they want once in a while. Just to feed this illusion that they're really in charge. Let's use capital punishment the same way we use sports and television in this country to distract people and take their minds off how bad they're being fucked by the upper 1%. Now, unfortunately, Monday Night Football doesn't last long enough. What we really need is year-round capital punishment on TV every night with sponsors. Gotta have sponsors. I'm sure as long as we're killing people, Marlboro Cigarettes and Dow Chemical will be proud to participate. Proud to participate. Balance the stupid fucking budget. And let me say this to you, my interesting Judeo-Christian friends, not only do I recommend crucifixions, I'd be in favor of bringing back beheadings. Beheadings on TV, slow motion, instant replay. And maybe you could let the heads roll down a little hill and fall into one of five numbered holes. Yeah. Let the people at home gamble on which hole the head is going to fall into. And you do it in a stadium so the mob can gamble on it too. Raise a little more money.
Man, no one did social commentary better than the late, great George Carlin. Okay, so I know many of you are still running into people that refuse to accept we face an existential crisis in the form of American fascism. But I take seriously that three of the country's most prestigious researchers into fascism from Yale University have fled to Canada already.
Yeah, heard this all as well. For those of you who missed that story, Yale history professor Timothy Snyder and his partner and fellow scholar Marcy Shore, along with renowned philosophy professor Jason Stanley, will now begin teaching at the University of Toronto's renowned Monk School this coming fall.
Let's talk about Tim Snyder for a bit. His book On Tyranny, I'm sure many of our listeners have read it, but if you haven't, you need to. It played such a major role in my decision to walk away from a lucrative career on the Hill, sitting pretty in a think tank for the rest of my life, to be able to speak frankly and without fear or favor about the truth of rising fascism in the Republican Party. So if you've never read On Tyranny, it's both cheap and short. That's Bitticoffer style. It's an easy but critical read. Anyway, that's where you keep hearing this term obey in advance. That's where it's from. The book contains 12 lessons about tyranny. And guess what number one is, Aaron?
Do not obey in advance.
Correct. Most of the power of authoritarianism is freely given. In times like these, individuals think ahead about what a more repressive government will want and then offer themselves without being asked. A citizen who adapts this way is teaching power what it can do.
Let's take a listen to Professor Snyder as he discussed obey in advance in terms of some of the early capitulation we're seeing from DC law firms and certain universities on his Substack.
This is Timothy Snyder. It's the 25th of October, 2024.
It's a longer clip, but it's well worth a listen.
I'm thinking today about the first lesson of On Tyranny, which is do not obey in advance. The reason why that's the first lesson is that for me, it's the first thing that we should be remembering, the first thing we should be learning from the horrors of the 20th century, that each of us does have some responsibility, and perhaps the wealthy and the powerful, maybe just a tiny bit more. The reason why this is the lesson of the 20th century, the reason why it's the first lesson on tyranny, is this. Those who work on the Nazi period, the period of the Nazi takeover, know that much of Hitler's rise to power had to do with people making adjustments in 1933, 1934, people anticipating what he would want from them and then going halfway. A very similar lesson was drawn by the anti-communist dissidents of the 1970s, who realized that every little thing that we do has consequences for those around us. They counseled as well not to obey in advance, but to instead live as if we were free. I have all this in mind, of course, because of these decisions by newspapers owned by very wealthy Americans not to endorse a presidential candidate. I gotta say, this strikes me as ignoring the essential thing that we were supposed to have learned from the 20th century, which is, in circumstances like these, do not obey in advance. If what you do is based on your anticipation, as it so obviously is, that an authoritarian might be about to come to power, then what you are doing is making it more likely that that authoritarian will come to power. And since you have already made concessions before he came to power, you're preparing yourself for making more concessions after he comes to power. And what's worse, if you're in a position of wealth and power yourself, you're discouraging all the other people who are less wealthy and less powerful. And aside from being politically wrong and morally outrageous, this is just simply unfair, because it puts the burden on taking action to those who are less fortunate than you. It puts them in the position of having to be more courageous than you. And of course, what it really means when someone who's wealthy and powerful makes adjustments, obeys in advance, what it really means is that they think, well, I'm going to be fine When democracy dies in darkness, I'm going to enjoy the shadows. That's what it really means. So for all of these reasons, this is outrageous. I hope these decisions will be changed. And regardless of that, I hope that the rest of us will keep in mind that we ought not to be obeying in advance. What we do always matters. What we do in the next few days matters a great deal. And the fact that people are obeying in advance is just a sign of how great the threat really is. So let's all do what we can. Again, Tim Snyder.
Again, last week we talked about how the Gestapo used announcements to police a population that was so much larger than them. This week, I want to spend some time talking about why people are so inclined to obey in advance. When you are in a situation like the Germans faced with the Nazis seizing power, and you have a personal cost that you're going to pay, and I think the sound clip from Lisa Murkowski right here really shows you what the cost is.
What do you have to say to people who are afraid?
She's at her town hall and her constituent tells her she's afraid. And she just went honest and she's like, I'm afraid too. I'm so afraid.
We're in a time and a place where I don't know. I have not been here before. And I'll tell you, I'm oftentimes very anxious myself about using my voice, because retaliation is real.
The fear of retribution is real is what she said, right? Lisa Murkowski is obeying, though, in advance, right? Like, she's basically saying, I would stand up to Trump, but if I do, MAGA's going to try to kill me and my family. I mean, so when you think about, you know, resistance to the democracy and over the course of November and December and January before the inaugural act, so many people reach out or mention to me, well, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And I'm like, I don't fucking know, dude. I know how to resist in a democracy. In a democracy, you resist by using the courts. You resist by showing up and having protests, right? You write letters to the op-ed, you run political ads. But in a fascist autocracy where resistance comes at a price, there's a powerful, powerful incentive for people to keep their heads down and to stay the fuck out of it, right? So like, imagine right now, you're one of these government employees in one of these agencies, but you haven't been terminated yet because they could only get the people, like without going through the proper legal processes, who were recent hires or had recently changed positions. But you know that you have been posting for the last 6 years or 8 years or 10 years about what a shit show Donald Trump is or whatever, right? You're sitting there and you know for sure that you're in danger of losing your livelihood. Most people are not going to give up their livelihoods. They're not going to put their own children, their own wife, their own home, their own careers on the line to help, like, the quote unquote greater good. In fact, obey in advance, you know, is so powerful that with the Nazis, like, they didn't have to enact a lot of controls over society. So they did, right? And ultimately institutionalized everything they were doing. But the fear factor got so many people to behave in the way that they wanted, to look away when they attacked the Jewish shops and they burned Jewish synagogues. Most Germans just averted their eyes. There's such a powerful incentive there, you know, for me, why I've been pushing so hard to keep us from falling all the way into the autocratic pit is that it's going to be very difficult to get back out with those incentives. One more thing before we go. Did I mention that Trump made one of Dr. Oz's grandkids puke at his presser last week?
Ooh. Press out.
I saw that, actually. It's unfortunate for the poor kid, but damn, if she didn't yak all over the press room right in the middle of all this bullshit.
Dude, that girl is all of us, Aaron. Well, it's time to go text my mom some Secret War plans and stare into the sun of another week of news in Trump's America. I welcome you to join me along the way. I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Rachel Bitticoffer and on the Cycle at Substack. That is thecycle.substack.com.
And while you're online, check out hitemwhereithurts.com. Rachel, I saw a Canadian wear a t-shirt the other day and it said, America, Canada's 11th province. And it reminded me of the clip that you're all excited about here.
Yeah, we're going to send you off with a good clip from a Dutch politician who's got a name I won't say, but Aaron will tackle, and a member of the European Parliament. He's figured out how to troll Donald Trump's home city. Remember, New York City used to be a Dutch colony.
Here is, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Gerben Jan Meindergertbrandy. Man, I'm sure I butchered that. Anyway, we'll see you next week.
We get Nasdaq. You get to join our densely populated country full of rude people that like to make money. Perfect match. Trump Tower will become a red light district, making it less sleazy than it is now. All avenues will be bike lanes, which allows you to yell from your bike to pedestrians, a rude thing the Dutch like, and that you New Yorkers would like as well. Our Dutch beaches are too full, so we need a new one on FDR Drive. It will be great. It will be the New York Riviera. Enough planning. Let's talk business. We offer $3 trillion plus Geert Wilders. And in exchange, we get all the 5 boroughs plus the Hamptons. USA can keep the rest of the state, and you can keep the jets. President Trump or Elon, whoever is in charge, call me and we will make a deal. And it will be great.